The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
I do want to kick things off this hour, though, with some political analysis as well, because the budget for processing and providing accommodation to asylum seekers was discussed before an Oireachtas committee today, the Oireachtas Migration Committee. And that bill has grown to 1.2 billion euro this year alone. So it was the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, who was in front of that committee. Matt Carthy is a Sinn Féin TD and he's chair of the committee and he's with me now. Matt, first of all, were you surprised at that level of spending?
The level of spending has gone beyond anything that could have been imagined even a short period of time ago. This year, for example, an estimated 1.2 billion euro is due to be spent on IPASS accommodation. It's possible that figure will be exceeded. Hundreds of millions more is going to be spent on accommodation for Ukrainians. Yet today at the Oireachtas Justice, Home Affairs and Migration Committee will be the first time that there's ever been any real scrutiny at Oireachtas level in terms of that spending. And the problem is that there is a serious issue in terms of transparency and accountability in terms of how that money is spent, who secures contracts, how they secure contracts, how much they're being paid individually. We do know some things. For example, we know that the average rate paid per bed per day rose by almost 70% in the 2 years to 2024. We also know, as a result of some media inquiries, a couple of very notorious examples where companies just emerged out of nowhere. One company was previously a cafe, made after-tax profits of 2,000 euro in 2021. And in 2024, the two directors managed to pay themselves in wages 4.6 million euro. Other notorious examples show an owner of a company in receipt of millions of euro of funding was actually also named by the Criminal Assets Bureau as being linked to gangland feuds. And there's a number of those areas. But as I say, the difficulty is that any of those examples we've found, not from the department being transparent, but actually through the work of journalists.
Now, people whose names have been linked with the Criminal Assets Bureau are kind of one category. There'll be lots of others who are making a lot of money, but they're doing it without doing anything wrong, per se. You know, they're not doing anything illegal. This is the system that was set up. The government went out looking for people to provide accommodation. Here's what we're going to pay you. And, I mean, it's not their fault that they're making all this money.
Well, as with all public expenditure, there is a need for transparency and accountability. The minister, in his opening statement, has set out that this was an emergency, that these things happened very quickly, that the department became overwhelmed in terms of the demands on the IPASS system. Now, some of those demands were as a result of the government's inefficiencies and incompetence, as I would argue, in terms of having a system in terms of processing applications, dealing with appeals, and so on and so forth. But regardless of all of that, even in an emergency situation, of course, things emerge sometimes where the departments have to be flexible in terms of applying the rules. But basic standard mechanisms such as value for money audits, carrying out assessments on the suitability of particular companies to house what are human beings at the end of the day, were completely discarded. The only criteria that appears in terms of the location of IPASS centres and the ultimate beneficiaries of these public monies was people willing to provide a building that they had within their possession. So,
but it was kind of any port in a storm, wasn't it?
Well, it was, but the difficulty we have now is...
And I know that's not great policy, but you know, you can't let perfection be the enemy of the good either. They were genuinely in a storm of sorts and they had to find somewhere for people to live. I mean, even with this policy, they failed to find somewhere for everybody to live and we had tents down the canal.
They did, and you know, this entire IPASS operation has been a debacle from start to finish. But I would contend that when you're dealing with taxpayers' money, you don't have the luxury of saying, "Oh well, we were dealing with a crisis situation because we have a crisis in terms of housing."
Matt, in fairness, then, I mean, were they to take a more methodical approach and go through it much more slowly and make sure that everything was, done in a different way and all kind of T's crossed and I's dotted, we'd have far more people living along the canal in tents and you'd be jumping up and down giving out about that too.
Well, I would contend if we had the processes in place in the first instance, we would have not had the pressures on the system. But secondly, you have to remember the government's approach to this led to huge tensions within many communities. Communities were left feeling voiceless in terms of sometimes very prominent buildings in the heart of their community being used for this purpose and with virtually no engagement at all with the local community. But on top of that, there is no other area of public policy where it would be countenanced or accepted at all that companies would emerge out of nowhere. Some companies, as we know, have very dubious track records, offshore ownerships. It's very hard in some cases to see who the beneficial owners of the companies are, and they're in receipt of literal millions of euro. We have made through this system and this approach by government millionaires overnight of people.
Matt, now this is a bit of dog whistling now, kind of suggesting there's something nefarious going on. All companies emerge out of nowhere. You know, all companies emerge with somebody recognizing that there's a service that they're going to provide. Let's go down to the CRO, we'll set up a company and we'll start tendering for that service, or we'll start providing that service, depending on which what the service is. That's what happened here.
There are very few instances where you could cite a cafe with profits of 2,000 euro in 2021 over a course of a very short period of time, moving into an entirely different area and receiving in profits millions of euro that they're able to provide in wages for their directors. And I'm not suggesting that there's anything illegal in any of this, but I am saying, and this is why the committee is convening today, there are questions that need to be asked as to the due diligence that was done across the board in terms of all of those who are in receipt of large sums of money, in terms of their capacity and ability to do the job, how it is that they were deemed suitable to carry out what is important work. Because we've also seen in the past when vulnerable people have been left to the behest of private entities, that if you don't have the proper checks and balances, then it ends up costing the state a lot more than even the original outlay. So I think today's engagement is a welcome first step. And I hope, because the minister has accepted in his opening statements that there have been failings in terms of how the government have approached this, I hope that the committee will be in a position to publish a report with very clear recommendations. And at the heart of this is the Irish people are spending a lot of money on this system. As I've said, 1.2 billion euro at least this year on IPAS system. The very least when that level of money is being involved is that there would be accountability and transparency in terms of how that money is determined, how it is that particular rates are being paid to some and not to others, and how it is that people have managed to find themselves in a position where they can secure this level of public funding.
Matt Carthy, Sinn Féin TD for Cavan Monaghan, Chair of that Oireachtas Migration Committee. Matt, thanks for speaking to us.
Thank you, Ciarán.
Cathal Malone is with me as well, the immigration lawyer. Cathal, maybe it's worth talking about the system. It's 25 years since it was introduced as a temporary measure, a little like income tax was famously introduced, I think, by King George III as a temporary measure, and we're still paying it. The last government, though, were very serious about unwinding it, and I guess COVID got in the way. Is that what happened?
Good evening, Ciarán. Well, the last government, I think, particularly under the direction of the Green Party, did seem to be serious about unwinding it. But I think, unfortunately, that was always based on some fairly dubious assumptions. So what happened was, as you correctly say, in the year 2000, John O'Donoghue, as Minister for Justice, decided to introduce direct provision as a six-month measure, a bit like income tax. And the idea was, in some respects, that they were going to make it unattractive to apply for asylum by essentially warehousing people in these sort of centres. Unfortunately, 25 years later, we've seen the effect of that. We've had children be born and grow up and go to school and go to secondary school even, having never been outside of, for example, Mosny. And so there was, at some stage, a public outcry about this. There were two reports the government sought. One was from Brian McMahon, the former High Court judge, and that was followed up by what was known as the Day Report. Catherine Day was an Irish woman and a former Secretary of General of the European Commission. Unfortunately, those reports, which were very well-intentioned and which set out a blueprint for ending, I suppose, the asylum accommodation system we currently have, they really took as their baseline that we would have the same number of applicants going forward, about 3,000 to 3,500 a year, as we had historically. Now, as we all know, that's not turned out to be the case. We were at 18,500 last year. It's a bit less this year, but still above 10,000 is the projected figure by year's end. And unfortunately, you know, that just makes the plan pretty unfeasible in any sort of reasonable time frame.
Now, I've spoken to Jim O'Callaghan, the Minister for Justice, about this, and he talks up the additional resources that have been provided to those working in the system, to the IPAS system itself, to the judiciary in terms of dealing with caseload, and what have you. And, you know, he would as well talk up the level of reform that has already taken place under his watch and the reform he plans. Has the system improved?
Well, in one sense, it's improved in that the times for decisions have definitely come down. I mean, we were looking at 6, 7, in extreme cases, even 10 years. That wouldn't have been unusual maybe 5 years ago in terms of how long people would wait. That was something that nobody wanted. And, you know, immigration lawyers were blue in the face from asking for the times to be shortened. Unfortunately, what's now happened is with the EU Migration and Asylum Pact, which is due to come in next year, they've gone completely the other way. And they're saying that the majority of applicants should get their decisions start to finish in 12 weeks. Now, of course, I can be accused of saying, you know, of giving out when I don't get something and then giving out when I do. But at the same time, I think that 12 weeks is far too short a time frame for somebody to actually come into the country, register an application, get proper legal advice, collect all the evidence and get out the other side as well. And actually, I don't understand how the minister is going to even resource that, because even though he's got waiting times down considerably, the average is still over 12 months and he has less than a year to get that down to 12 weeks. And so I'm just not sure that's going to happen.
And what are the difficulties that the system faces in getting that down to 12 weeks?
Well, first of all, on a very basic level, you can't photocopy immigration lawyers. I mean, okay. I think we all accept that people are entitled to some basic level of legal advice or representation. There are a limited number of people in the country who are experts in this. It takes a long time to train people up. We are absolutely all beyond capacity at the moment, and that's with the system where it's taking a year to get a decision. If you want to make things 12 times quicker, then presumably you need 12 times the number of lawyers, and I don't see where the capacity is going to come from. On another very basic level, the International Protection Office on Mount Street is at capacity in terms of its physical space available. I think the Dublin Inquirer had a good piece last year that said they were looking for new facilities to have a much expanded ability to interview people. But unfortunately, nobody wants to rent or sell a building to the government if they know that it's going to be used for dealing with asylum applications, presumably because they've seen the protests and some of the arson attacks, etc., that have happened.
How much of a problem is it that people who have been processed through the system remain within the system because there's nowhere for them to live?
It's a huge problem. I mean, the estate's accommodating just over 30,000 people at the moment. About 5,000 of those actually have their papers. They're found to be completely genuine applicants. But unfortunately, they're just finding it impossible to move on. And I must say that I was pretty dismayed, to put it mildly, at the minister's comments in The Examiner today, where he said they were, quote unquote, abusing the system. The fact of the matter is that nobody wants to be living in direct provision or in emergency accommodation with their whole family in one room. If they could move out at all, they would. Now, they are entitled to HAP, housing assistance payment, on the same basis as an Irish citizen. But as we all know, first of all, there's a pre-existing housing crisis which the government has to take some responsibility. And as a result, there aren't that many places to rent. And also, unfortunately, even though it's now been made unlawful to refuse room to people who have are HAP applicants, a lot of landlords anecdotally are still doing that. So if these people could move out, they would. Mm. And when the minister says they're abusing the system, look, he could try and evict them in the morning if he wanted, but the reason he won't do that is they would then become homeless legally and will be the responsibility of the local authorities in the area in which they live.
Before I let you go then, Cathal, is there another country that we can look to close to home? Is there a country in Europe that is the gold standard in this regard? You know, the Goldilocks zone, they've got a system that makes timely decisions, but not so timely that it tramples on the rights of asylum seekers.
There is nowhere that's doing anything perfectly. What I will say is that if you look at the international way that things are done, there is much more of a centralization and much more of a state ownership of the process. If you look at the $1.2 billion that Matt Carthy is talking about, and he's maybe rightly talking about the fact that there's an out of profiteering in the system.
We've lost Cathal just as we were running out of time. So we might have to get him back on sometime soon to talk about that final issue about the system and about the ownership, I think is the point he was getting to before we lost the connection. And look, the government in that regard are trying to buy City West. That's one of their examples that they give of taking ownership, of public ownership of the buildings that house asylum seekers. But that's just one example, and most in private hands. Cathal, thank you. If you can hear me, Cathal Malone, immigration lawyer.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.